And now it's my distinct pleasure to present the Philip F. Anschutz Trophy to the captain of the Columbus crew, Guillermo Barros Escaloto.
Of the 2008 MLS Super Draft, the Los Angeles football craft select from the University of Akron.
This happened in Argentina, maybe people died. Someone could die, you know?
If they took Nuevo Chicago and they were moving it to Rosario.
Yeah. Still a chance for a fourth goal here. Affle drives forward. Affle scores! What a goal! It is amazing! King Harrison grabs the crown in second half stoppage time!
Hey buddies, it's the Massive Report podcast brought to you by the Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street, a 21 and up arcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. There, nice talking me. OldNorthArcade.com, hit it up. We're doing a little Massive Report after dark tonight. We've got Patrick Gul'dan with us. Patrick, how are you doing, sir?
Not too bad this evening.
Excellent. Always a pleasure to have Patrick on. We've got Alex Stanek back with us as well. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing fantastic. Couldn't be better.
Terrific. Just terrific. And Sam Fahmy as well on the ones and twos. How are you doing, Sam?
You know, I'm doing great. And I'm actually drinking water, which is better than LaCroix.
I don't know what you're talking about. This is a beer. This is a hearty beer that I'm drinking because I'm a man. It's a craft beer, not at all a passion fruit LaCroix. Anyways, gentlemen, a lot to talk about tonight. It seems like, you know, it's been a while since the crew were on the pitch, but we'll be going back and talking a little bit about that performance out in Bridgeview, then talking about some of the developments on the Save the Crew front as we're wont to do, and finally, you know, finishing it off with the preview for this upcoming game Saturday as crew are taking on New York City FC back in Mapfre Stadium for, I believe, one of three final home games, I think, left on the schedule. And then, of course, some playoff games. But we will...
Three games in September and one one in October against Minnesota United.
Ah, there you go. Three in September. Appreciate that, sir. But let's go back to Bridgeview. Thursday, a result, fellas, was this result, the 1-1 draw, you know, is it a result you're happy with because this is Bridgeview and it's a cursed place? Or is this a game that crew should have come away with more from?
I think when you look at games like these, you always think that the team should be getting more from these because, you know, you have a team in Chicago that had lost 8 straight. You know, there's always you want to add that 9th straight at that point. With a team as bad as Chicago has been this year, you want to get all 3 points. However, Chicago plays a style that is the antithesis of how Columbus wants to play. It makes it difficult. I was out there in April, and you could just tell Chicago was going to pick their spots, hold things tight, and really disturb how Columbus was going to play. And it showed. You know, there was no fluidity to how, you know, Columbus went forward. Chrissy, you know, didn't really have too many quality chances. You know, there were a couple off of set pieces, but, you know, they weren't able to create. And really, it was a little bit of luck and a little bit of making your own luck. And, you know, we get the 1-1 draw.
I was impressed by Mullins on that play that, you know, led to the tying goal. Albeit, you know, it was a pretty much a fluke play. He again, the way that he was able to take on Schweinsteiger there and kind of serve it up for at least put the ball in a dangerous place. I think he's been a welcome addition to this lineup. You know, adding a different element. I just, you know, I have fun just watching him beat Bastian Schweinsteiger. But let's talk a little bit about his addition and, you know, the difference he's making for this team.
Well, I think the case with Patrick Mullins is that the team really hasn't had a second striker that they could work with in the way that Mullins performs. He's much more similar to, say, Justin Zardes than to Adam John. Adam John is a you know, a target forward, you know, fairly good in the air, but limited otherwise, and he certainly doesn't have the speed, and his movements maybe not quite as crisp. Mullins, you would think you would want something that's a little bit different than Zardes, but having two different strikers on the field that are able to make runs that are intelligent gives Columbus something that they hadn't had before, which is that 4-4-2, and that 4-4-2, that provides a different look, that provides different ways to get the ball into the box, that and you know it's been very useful in its situations. You know, the drawbacks are that you kind of leave yourself soft in the middle when your central midfielders are stretched. But Mullins is that perfect addition in that he's a smart player that makes great runs, and those players are rewarded by Greg Berhalter's system.
And then where the system, you know, rewards players like Patrick Mullins as well, it also leaves you vulnerable to any sort of missteps in that final third. And it's, again, I think a flaw, or at least a fault identified in the system that was the led to the Columbus's lone goal they surrendered to Nikolic. Is this, again, just going to be something that you have with this system? Or is it, does this team, I mean, that pass back by Milton, it seemed so, you know, completely ill-advised. What was going on with that?
I mean, I think that MLS quality players are just going to make mistakes from time to time. And the system that we play kind of leads to those mistakes being exploited by the other team. So yeah, I do think it's kind of a side effect of the system that we play. You have to outscore the opponent. Simple as. They didn't do that. They didn't get it done. They needed to get it done. I kind of disagree a little bit with Patrick. I think that they needed to get 3 points from Bridgeview. It's just, you know, the quality of opponent that you're facing is so low that if you carry this kind of form into the playoffs, it's not going to work. So from a point standpoint, I mean, that 1 point is fine. But from a form standpoint, I thought that they just looked half a step too slow. You know, they didn't quite look as connected as maybe they always are. But it's something that I'm a little bit worried about, just kind of the form that this team is in right now. They have some time to turn it around still. I still don't think we've really seen Merrim at his best. Hopefully he can get there. I know I mentioned that last week as well. But they need to improve if we're going to see a deep run into this playoff, I think. If they go into the playoffs in the same kind of form they're in right now, we're maybe getting knocked out in the first round.
So one of the things I wanted to come back to, I would agree with Alex that they looked a step slow. And I think that Chicago, just the way they play, just makes things, you know, if things aren't working at the proper speed, this team does look off. You know, there were chances late in the game. That was the other thing, is that, Columbus had a pass into the box that was handled by Cleveland, the fire goalkeeper. And I know it was a point of contention that it wasn't video reviewed. And this is the unfortunate thing about video review. The rules on that are very specific. And this is a case where this is not a red card offense. You know, given that there's three other fire defenders, and it's not a clear goal scoring situation. So, you know, VAR doesn't come into play. The problem that's compounded here is that, you know, the reporters on site in Chicago can't ask about it. You know, video review is not something that you can ask about. You can ask questions to referees, but if you ask about VAR, you get nothing. There's nothing there. Mm-hmm. So it's a case where, you know, there's very little communication. You know, Pro may come out with some sort of commentary saying this wasn't a video reviewable offense, but you know MLS fans are kind of left wondering. In that case, the official probably got it right, other than missing the handball call that was fairly obvious. But as far as the VAR goes, it's how the system is.
It does not make it any less infuriating. If you're a crew fan, or just, I mean, again, the official is right there. And I think you've got to demand more from, you know, your officials, or demand more accountability. And that's just, it seems like, you know, and that through MLS as well. It seems like you can't either. We can't have it, you know, it can't be good. And no, you can't address it or have any form of, you know, redress if you're a team who's, you know, on the, I mean, it's, you know, poor product as well for MLS as they're trying to market it. But, you know, I digress. So this, the form of this team right now, it seems, you know, pretty concerning. And is this going to be something, you know, do they need to, what can Greg Berhalter do to, you know, try to get some sort of spark going if we're going to, you know, finally see this team do what Greg Berhalter team seemed to do, and that's really start hitting their stride to close out the season and into the playoffs. Are we worried about this team's ability to do that?
This team's in the playoffs. They're not going to be out of the playoffs. It's where they'll end up when it comes to the playoffs. You know, there's so much separation between playoff teams and non-playoff teams in the Eastern Conference. That position is what matters here. And being able to put together some good results during the home stretch in September, that's where form improves. This team is average on the road. You know, the tie in Chicago is frustrating, but, you know, I think that's to be expected, not desired. You know, losing to Atlanta, you know, Atlanta's very good. Atlanta's probably the best team in the league. So these are things that it's not unexpected. And Columbus isn't a great team. You know, they're not top tier in MLS. The separation between Atlanta, the Red Bulls, and New York City FC, those are your top teams, and Columbus has been separated. Whether that's through not spending enough, not picking the right players, maybe sometimes the system and the performances. This is a team that may not have the horses to move up the standings. I do think that they have enough to keep teams like Philadelphia from moving on up, or teams like Montreal, or, you know, DC, who's charging. But those top three teams, they're a different class.
It does. Yeah. It certainly seems to be a, you know, top three, that top tier, and then everyone else below. Moving back. We've also got some developments obviously going on outside and away from the field. Save the Crew, notably, we have to, you know, address the fact of what went on last week. Is Anthony Precourt and his stooges down there revealed the new logo and team for Austin FC, guys, and then of course with the two Twin Oaks, just very much representative of Austin and their authentic commitment to Austin. What are your thoughts, guys? Great new logo for a great new MLS team. Are we all excited? That Verde green, it really pops.
Yeah, it does. Heck yeah, it pops. authentically Austin, man. They are so authentically Austin. No, I don't hate it. I mean, I think it's pretty lame. It's pretty just generic MLS logo. It's better than Orlando City's logo. I'll give them that. They have definitely cleared Orlando City. The Revolution logo is worse for sure. The Columbus
don't forget logo. Sporting Kansas City's logo is also bad. It's not great.
Theirs is not great. I don't hate theirs. It's definitely not in the top tier. It feels like something that was thrown together by a fan, like one of those kind of just clip art kind of random designs that you see on Twitter from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
There's not really much behind it, I think, is one of the concerns. I guess there's a Treaty Oak in Austin that's famous, but apparently Precourt Sports Ventures didn't even know about that. They just kind of like threw a tree on there for no apparent reason. Some people have speculated that this has to do with Anthony Precourt's infatuation with Portland. That's a possibility. Some people have said that it's trolling Save the Crew because Save the Crew had a TIFO, Respect Your Roots, that had a tree on it. That's a possibility, although I would hope to God that he would not be making a $200 million business decision using meme logos, but you never know. It's okay. It's I'm very whelmed. Like, I don't really feel strongly one way or the other about that logo.
I think that as far as a piece of work, it's acceptable. It's good.
Maybe without the history, like, and the amount of connections that could be made to it.
I think the things that irritate, and I said my piece, I put it in the article. So specifically on the piece of work, it's fine. I think it's a little pro forma. I think it hits all the right branding notes. Those branding statements are always laughable. Designers want to make it mean something. Just let it develop. And as far as knowing about the TIFO, apparently that was a surprise to the designers when asked about it. It's like, oh, I didn't know anything about that. Very surprised when he was shown a picture of the TIFO. So I think this is a case where, PSV is stepping in it to some extent, just through the lack of concentration or the lack of thought. But this really shouldn't be, a surprise to anyone at this point. This is not a group of people that have forward-thinking care and consideration at the top of their list.
Is it just me, or does it seem that in every decision, even with the groups that have worked with Precourt Sports Ventures, or even with people that are considering investing with Precourt Sports Venture, and Austin City Council is part of that too, but does it seem that almost nobody has done their due diligence in any way or form to investigate or read or understand or see what's going on? And it's not like this was 20 years ago where we didn't have access to newspapers on the internet or, social media or pictures or anything like that. But it just seems that almost every group that has worked with PSV, including PSV, seems to have not done even remotely its due diligence on something that's a fairly significant investment of time mm-hmm. and money and resources and taxpayers' funds, et cetera, et cetera.
So I think that when you look at every group, and as far as the logo, it's fine, and I wouldn't expect the Butler brothers to delve deep into the history of, crew fandom to get the information. So I think that that's a case where, you outsource that to a local firm, which is nice. Doesn't have necessarily the same effect as, bringing it in-house with the Crew SC logo, which, has the history and has what's important to a club with history. I think the case with working with PSV is that everyone who works with them has an ulterior motive. They've balanced whether or not it's worth it or not to work with them, the Austin City Council included. The allure of pro sports is outweighed by one of the better, you know, stadium deals that's out there. I think the Austin City Council, as far as government entities, didn't do terrible, which is a win for most governments. They're bad at these deals. The fans that are down there, you know, they get their pro soccer. I think that, you know, making a deal like this, you might live to regret it, because Precourt has shown that there's some basic blocking and tackling that he just doesn't get.
With them, I think they just think that, you know, well, they were those Columbus people, those Columbus council members, we're just smarter than them. Everyone else in Columbus, we're just smarter. So Anthony Precourt won't, you know, pull one over on us. And, you know, the fact that they've just bungled everything so colossally, in the days and months and weeks since first announcing this, you know, relocation effort, it makes it, you know, almost implausible. It's like, how do I reconcile that he was also able to cover that up for, you know, as long as they did? But this Austin, you know, the folks, I think they know to extent who they're getting in bed with, and they just think they're going to be smarter than him. I think that there's no way that, even if you're just sourcing it to a local firm to, you know, design, if they came up with like the tree logo, there's no way there isn't a level of awareness there. And they know what they're doing. And, you know, you could have just as easily, if you have one person, you know, in there kind of looking at it, it's like, oh, hey, well, that would have, that's going to have be pretty poor optics. Maybe you can just do something else, because I'm sure they didn't, you know, just source the one design. Then you go with that. But it's just a willful ignorance, or just deliberately trolling. Which, how can you take any of this seriously? I think the point that Mike Arace made in his column was you know pretty well made. Alex?
Well, I think that is not really being talked about as much, and this is kind of longer term. When I look at not just the logo, but kind of their whole situation in Austin, one of the main concerns that I have for them is if they're going to be able to kind of shake the narrative that surrounds this team. So much about Major League Soccer success is kind of this initial run of form. I mean, the teams that have started super hot in Major League Soccer in terms of attendance, in terms of interest levels, things like that, those teams have all been very successful. You know, you look at your kind of Atlanta Uniteds, your Seattles, your Portlands. Those teams are just made for the league. I think Cincinnati is a really good example of a team that's really poised for success, just on the basis of that initial initial interest that will kind of snowball to greater and greater interest over time. The thing that I thought about with that logo, one of the first things I said about it, maybe the first thing I said about it, is the headlines for this logo are going to be really dumb in a couple years when Austin moves and everybody starts writing Austin uprooted headlines. But in all seriousness, I do think that that kind of uprooted stuff in the logo, the way they've done this whole thing, they're setting themselves up to have not just Columbus fans, but fans from around the league treat them like garbage for a long time. I know that there are a handful of very prominent Austin fans who embrace that and fans who enjoy being the villains. I don't think Austin as a city likes being the villain. I don't think Austin the city is used to being the villain. And I don't think it's going to work for them being the villain. And so how this all plays out in the long term with their success as a franchise, I'm very interested in. And frankly, for the sake of the league, a little bit frightened by, because I don't know how successful they're going to be. This is a city that has lost two minor league soccer teams that have much smaller budgets and that can handle much less support than a larger team. I mean, if we were to have a USL team in Columbus with a fraction of the support that we have today, we'd be totally fine. The, you know, the salaries are less, the operating costs are less, everything's, you know, not as big. They couldn't keep those teams. How are they supposed to keep this team? I know people in the city of Austin who don't think that it's going to be successful. And so anything that they do that's not a home run at this point, and I don't think this logo was a home run, is working against them because they have shown very little grassroots support so far, and they have very little time, much less time than any other expansion franchise in MLS history if they're actually going to start next season, which I doubt. But if we're going by that assumption, they're going to have less time, less support going into their first season than any other team, and they're going to have a track record that's not great in the city itself. Yeah, we're all kind of talking about it as if it's, oh, it's okay, but it's not great. Not great doesn't get it done for Austin FC, I think, at this point. Now, I still think that this team will not be playing next season. I think that they're going to give it a couple years, and a couple years to kind of flesh out the identity of the team, to let all this stuff die down, to let Columbus fans keep their team, I think will do a world of good for them. But if for some reason they do decide to move forward next season and play in a minor league baseball stadium and go with this tree logo on, you know, 6 months notice and all that stuff, watch out. I don't think it's going to work for them. I think they're going to be in a lot of trouble, and I think MLS is going to be looking back on this as something not to do in the future.
The Dell Stadium, also a filming site for The Walking Dead, I believe I saw. So, you know, that'd be great optics.
Oh, that's just asking for it right there.
I mean, the idea of them, I mean, and we've touched on this a while, but like the idea of them playing in front of, even if it's a packed Dell Stadium, you know, however many seats that would be, 6,000 or 7,000, maybe up to 10,000, still a fraction. And just looking at that, you know, the product that they would have putting out there, the product that MLS is telling everybody is this, you know, the best soccer. And, you know, that going against Crew Stadium, Afray Stadium, you know, a packed house and that, or even what they normally had it, because the attendance problems only, you know, began when Crew started wanting to, or at least the attendance narrative only became an issue when they decided to count the numbers in a way that they wanted to issue and make it part of the narrative, that being PSV and stuff. So, It's frustrating, to say the least. But looking at, you know, Alex, you'd mentioned those markets that have been successful out the gate, and Atlanta, obviously number one on the list, at least of the recent ones. They're the new hotness, you know, All-Star Game, everything. Don Garber loves to point to the Atlanta crowds, that 70,000 people in there to watch soccer being played on turf on a football field. Which is, it's great, and they've had a lot of success. They're one of those teams that have spent on a lot of money on good players, and they're reaping the benefits of them right now. But their owner, Arthur Blank, had something to say that's coming out now in an Atlanta Journal Constitution article, I believe. Can you update our listeners?
Yeah, so he gave kind of a long-winded answer about the Crew. But the part that's kind of getting everybody's attention is the last part. He kind of goes on this long bit about how, you know, the situation's really tough and you have to do everything you can to try to make it work. And if it doesn't work, you have to move the team. But he basically finishes this entire question. The last bit of the question is, and I quote, "Give the existing community and existing fan base a chance to step up and show their commitment." It sounds like he's basically on the Save the Crew bandwagon. I don't know if he meant something else by that. I wish that the audio was posted. I don't believe that it is, but I would love to hear him kind of answer that question himself rather than just reading the words. But certainly a very interesting answer from him. And if you read the full answer, a lot of that is kind of about the city not doing its part. But then there's another kind of bit in there that almost makes it seem like he's a little bit dissatisfied with Anthony Precourt. And some of his earlier comments in this process had been attributed to kind of potentially being about Anthony Precourt, where he said the reason that Atlanta is so successful and that other teams aren't is that the other owners aren't kind of going all in on their cities and things like that. They're not showing their commitment. They're not, you know, really kind of getting down in the trenches and you know, fighting for this stuff. He seems to not be the biggest fan of Anthony Precourt from the little bits of in pieces that we've read, which to me is very encouraging. Anthony Precourt's probably not going anywhere in Major League Soccer, at least in the short term. But to have support from Arthur Blank, who's arguably the superstar owner in Major League Soccer right now, definitely a good thing. So we'll have to wait and see. I'm sure that other people will be asking him questions next time he's available after that question. But yeah, very, very interesting answer.
It's hard to read into to a Q&A sometimes because and I, judging by what this looks like, we'll never really necessarily see the audio because, you know, it's on the reporter's tape. Mm-hmm. I'll measure in this way, in that when you're on the cuff as far as a question and answer session, sometimes you can get a little rambling. Sometimes you might say things that might not be necessarily coherent. That's where listening to the audio might be handy. However, I think it's definitely notable that this is one of the very, very rare, if not the only one I can think of, an owner talking about the situation in Columbus rather than a very non-committal answer, because this was far more detailed about the situation than any other ownership group or investor operator, however you want to term it, has been as far as talking about the situation, because this has been very managed as far as the communication by the league, in that the league is saying pretty much nothing. PSV is the only ones making comments, and I don't know if the league is looking at this that they're going to be, you know, we're staying out of this. This, you know, PSV is carrying the load, even if that's ridiculous in truth. But Arthur Blank choosing to say something now, that seems notable.
It definitely is. And you look at, you know, it's just, it's again, I think it's about as throaty of an endorsement as you can get from an owner, because I think a lot of them want the relocation to be able to go through, frankly, so they have the right to, and they can, I mean, not that, especially with what could happen with the legal battle. So if they can, and that they can avoid that. And, but Art Blank, this is someone that's hard for the league to come back at too. And he knows that. He knows how much sway he has. He runs Atlanta. He's, you know, the big name NFL owner. And for him, I think, yeah, you can catch him off the cuff, but I think there is a degree of thought that went into that. And if he's, you know, has some interest, and I think as owners, it's a no-brainer to just sell the crew as they are to some locals, and give Austin the time, as you talk about, Alex, to just kind of, you know, to reset, think a little bit more, flesh everything out, and get some of the sour taste out of everyone's mouth, and then come back straight into their, you know, brand new stadium in 2020 or 2021, and then have this sure thing, you know, this thing in Columbus where you're avoiding this PR mishap, at least salvaging something out of it, and you've got new invested owners. You're going to get your downtown stadium, which they want, and you're going to have everything else. There are at least some new hotness in Columbus to some immediate new investments that will lead to short-term growth And ideally long term, obviously, but it seems to be so fueled by those, you know, whenever something new comes out. So I think this has got to be encouraging, and you might see, I don't know, do you guys think that, you know, other owners, if they're seeing Arthur Blank, Blank want to, you know, going on the record talking about this, do you think others might follow, or do you think it's going to be Dan Kortzmark shutting everyone up?
I doubt it. I doubt we see anything really come from this outside of, you know, just another owner talking that will probably get a text or an email from Don Garber saying, hey, shut your yapper.
Garber's boss.
Yeah, but that's not, I mean, if that was the case, we would have probably heard something from Merritt Paulson. We would have probably heard something from
There's tiers. Merritt Paulson not being the primary owner of the Timbers is a little bit different.
That's dad, you know,
that's his dad, former Treasury Secretary and financial luminary Hank Paulson. And then, you know, you have Arthur Blank, maybe a group of one that would be able to do this, because he's an owner big enough, bigger than the league, you know, and what he does, that he's also involved enough that he will want to say something. You have owners that have other NFL teams, but they aren't necessarily as hands-on. You have owners that are all in on MLS, but they're maybe not as big enough to kind of buck what the league is saying. So beyond Arthur Blank, I don't see it. He's going to have his say. It was fairly pro forma, but he definitely, you know, reinforced what would be Don Garber's party line, in that we want to try to make it work. In the city that we're in, much like the NFL, but also much like the NFL, they've moved teams. So we're going to have to see if they actually follow through, and if, you know, Columbus has a plan, which, you know, there are rumors. We've seen what Save the Crew can do as far as what a new stadium might look like. There's ownership groups out there supposedly that have money and will, and there's political backing. If there is backing in what they're saying, if they actually truly believe that, then maybe Columbus should get a second look one way or the other.
Well, and I mean, the thing is, and I was kind of touching on this before about Austin, but there are so many people in this country that want to see a team in Austin. You know, I was going back through my old tweets, and I wanted a team in Austin before all this stuff happened. So the reason that there's so much opposition now to this team is not the city. It's not even necessarily Anthony Precourt in and of himself. It's the situation. It's the fact that you are destroying the first team in league history when you don't have to, in order to create this thing purely because one guy wants it, in spite of, you know, tens of thousands of people who are saying, we don't want this. One man gets to override all of that and try to push this through. That's not in the spirit of soccer as most soccer fans understand their sport. That is the way that most NFL fans understand their sport, or baseball fans, or any other American sport, but soccer is kind of its own thing. And Arthur Blank kind of touched on that in his answer when he said, you know, that the fans are I forget what he said, really avid or something like that. And so I just don't know if this really makes sense for them to kind of burden that team with all of this crap that's going to follow them down there. All you have to do is say the Crew are staying in Columbus. We've sold them to such and such person in Columbus who's going to build a beautiful downtown stadium. The Columbus Partnership have lined up sponsors A, B, C, D, E, and F, and they are set for the foreseeable future. And they're going to take a couple years to rebuild this thing, and it's going to be amazing. You know, we care a lot about the community. Look at how we've demonstrated that right now. And then everybody forgets about Austin for a little bit, and all the focus moves to nicer things. And yeah, maybe some people still hold a grudge against Anthony Precourt. Maybe some You know, journalists still hold a grudge against Anthony Precourt for trying what he tried, but it's not going to be the level of anger that it will be if the team is actually destroyed. So I think that the clear answer here is just to save the team. And I mean, I don't know. This is kind of a different thing to talk about. I don't know. Are we going to talk about Alexi Lalas later on?
No. Go straight into that because that's how it's going to go.
All right. So Alexi Lalas, kind of on a halftime program, was talking about how MLS just needs to announce tomorrow that Austin is getting the crew and just make it official right now and stop giving the fans in Columbus false hope. And the fans in Columbus can get a USL team and blah, blah, blah. And this will be, you know, it's not great for Columbus, but, you know, they're going to do the best that they can. And we're going to, you know, give them this gift of a USL franchise. And that'll make everything good. And it'll make the lawsuit go away. And everybody basically laughed about this or were very upset about it. One of the two. And the reason that people were either laughing or upset is because it's ridiculous. I mean, the idea is completely ridiculous. But I think that the reason that Alexi Lalas made that statement was not for your average fan in Columbus or your average MLS fan anywhere. I think that he made that statement because they wanted that statement heard by a select group of people here in Columbus to try to get them to increase their offer, which I don't think they're going to do. And I don't think that MLS is going to be able to squeeze any more money out of the city than they're probably already getting offered now. But they wanted that out there as kind of a scare tactic. I think that we are going to save this team. I think that people like Arthur Blank, people like Don Garber know the way this story is going to end. I think probably on some level they've accepted it. I'm guessing that Arthur Blank will like it. I don't think Don Garber will. But I think they've kind of accepted it, and now we're in the phase where it's, okay, let's extort as much money from the city of Columbus front for this thing as humanly possible before we kind of tuck tail and run. Because I don't see any way where anyone benefits at this stage from moving the current iteration of the Columbus Crew. I mean, what do they get? They get Will Trapp in Austin. Nobody cares. They get Zach Steffen. He's going to go to Europe in the offseason anyway. What do you get from moving the team? You get not having a team in Columbus. If that is worth all the pain and suffering that you're going to inflict on your brand and all the pain and suffering you're going to inflict on Austin FC, then yeah, go for it. But it's not. It's clearly not. We've got a plan here for success. Let us do it. Save the crew. It's that simple.
I will gently rebut in that I don't think that MLS has the kind of flexibility that people think that they do. I think that there are things that constrain them. That's a little bit more than what is necessarily apparent. So the problem with divesting Anthony Precourt even temporarily, teams don't like to do that. Leagues don't like to do that in American sports to teams because ownership is a select group of individuals, and you don't want to fracture that. These are probably the most important people to MLS, the people who pay all the bills, and so it's treading very gently to be able to find a solution if they hope to keep Columbus by trying to placate Anthony Precourt. If you look to put an expansion team either in Austin or Columbus, you're also messing up the current expansion process, mm-hmm. and you're impacting other cities that may think that Austin and or Columbus and or both are jumping to the head of a line. There are constraints on the league that are beyond what may be apparent, like I said. So it's not necessarily clear and simple. I think that Don Garber's job got a whole lot harder when Columbus was as aggressive as they have been with Save the Crew, with some of the things that are happening behind the scenes from what reports have said, possible ownership groups that make Columbus much more attractive than they thought it was going to be. You know, if this is just moved to Austin, make it clean, all they have to worry about is maybe San Antonio. But now they have Sacramento, or they have Detroit, or they have 12 other cities like Phoenix or Raleigh or any of these cities that are looking to jump in. And now they have to manage that process. And then possibly ownership groups if they can't find something that's amenable to Precourt and what he's wanting to do. Because, you know, if he has some people that he has promised things in Austin to be able to deliver, that also throws a wrinkle into any sort of planning. It's just a difficult situation, and it's also a challenge when we don't see the full story.
But at one point, does MLS come in and say, is it really worth it to keep this guy who's damaging the entire brand, possibly the entire league, and possibly causing a dent in how that league operates or you know, the response of the fans? I mean, you have to consider where you can cut your losses. And is it getting to that point, or what is that point of where they need to consider where to cut these losses? Yeah, there are other cities that are in this process, but I don't know. They put themselves in a pickle, and they need to figure out how to get out of that pickle. But they definitely stepped in it, like you said earlier.
I don't see Precourt as meeting that threshold. I mean, you really have to be a mess up considerably to get kicked out of the ownership club. You know, you have to mess up in a Chivas USA style way to really kind of get kicked out. And you know, if we look at what Precourt's done, sure, he has stepped in it in a PR sense every step of the way. He's kind of damaged a brand in Austin soccer. He has stirred up a hornet's nest. But I'm wondering how long lasting is the animus towards MLS? Is it a blip, or is it something more significant?
I think it's more significant, and I think that he's stepped in it way worse than even Chivas did. This is the worst possible timing for something like this to happen. You are already dealing with the kind of pushback against U.S. soccer as an organization, as this kind of corrupt money-making entity that really doesn't care about soccer, and we missed the World Cup because you got a bunch of greedy people who are putting all this money into the pockets of who knows where, and instead of putting it into academies and things like that, and we've got this wasted generation, and we're never going to be anybody unless we get all these crooks out, and you have Sunil Gulati going, and then you have what's her face, like Kathy something or whatever, who her bid,
Carter, right?
Yeah, Kathy Carter, her bid went up in flames basically because of her connection to Soccer United marketing, and then you have this whole saga, which just reinforces the exact same points about greed and about, you know, the American soccer consumer literally just being a consumer, a worthless number on a spreadsheet to people, whereas in Europe it's this different thing. You know, we have been sold this romantic vision of soccer as a sport separate from all others, and the way MLS has operated recently, and honestly historically as well, has basically just been like an NFL light with a soccer ball rather
NFL
than NFL
Europe. That's what Don Garber did before he came to MLS.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, it's not that it's necessarily by hapstance, and I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole. But ultimately, from when you look at it from an ownership prospect, you know, he successfully has gone where others haven't. He's gotten a stadium deal inside the city limits of Austin, which is an achievement in and of itself. And whether or not he's able to lock down, more investment in Austin, as he. The random report last week said that he was selling, but I haven't seen anything more on that. If things are happening again behind the scenes, it's not necessarily as clean as what it might seem on the top. you know, so from an ownership perspective, yeah, it you know, this is a victory, a bloody one, a very costly one. We'll see how long lasting, but you know, Kathy Carter, she got 40% of the vote the first round, 35. Carlos Cordero had, he eventually took it, but it's not like Kathy Carter was an inconsequential nominee. So I think that some of this angst that can be seen can be overblown. I think ultimately what happens is most people don't care deeply.
Yeah, I agree that most don't care, but I think that the number that do care are growing, and that every instance where something like this happens, you kind of add to this negative narrative that really they can't dispute. I mean, the fact of the matter is that the accusations that are being leveled against Soccer United Marketing and Major League Soccer as things stand today are all true. I mean, what happened to the $250 million in profit? Where is that? It's in a bank account somewhere, we're told. Why is that not being put towards other things? We don't really know. What is the stake that MLS owners have in U.S. soccer? We don't know. And so there's all these kind of question marks around things. Everything's done behind closed doors, top secret. And then you have the information that Anthony Precourt bought this team with the full intention, it seems like anyway, or at least a way out, to Austin, Texas. That's not a good look. And so you have to kind of take all these things together as this narrative. And I would argue this is worse than Chivas. I mean, everything that happened with Chivas USA felt like a mistake that couldn't have been avoided. I mean, you got this owner who owns this other team that's incredibly successful, and he brings a team to the United States, and it's really not successful. The tie-in with Liga MX just doesn't work. You have to find some other solution. So you blow it up. You tell Chivas supporters, hey, chill. We're going to put another team in LA. Don't worry. It's going to be great. We don't know what they're going to be called yet, but it's going to be great. Don't worry. Give us a few years. We'll be back. And then everybody's kind of happy. In Columbus, I don't know what the solution is that they can possibly put on the table. People aren't going to be cool with them just saying, oh, don't worry, we'll keep this ownership group in mind for expansion later on. First of all, there might not be expansion later on. Second of all, people want this team now. I mean, I've supported this team since I was 8 years old. I don't really want to stop. I don't really want to pause for a little bit. So I think they're in a tough bind. We'll see what happens with it. I think that the city is going to stick to their guns with the lawsuit. And this lawsuit is just adding, to the fire that is everything else. So we'll see how things go. But I think people like Arthur Blank stepping forward and the pushback that we've seen nationwide from people like Lexi Lawless is really, really encouraging. I think we're almost there. I think we're getting close.
It's interesting too, and I agree with a lot of your points, Patrick, about the sort of where in some cases MLS's hands, I don't want to say are tied, but certainly maybe a bit harder lift than we all would like to think. But you also look at the special exclusions that they've, whether it's for David Beckham and that gang there. But I think if they are to award either like give Anthony Precourt an expansion team, you've got you're going to have some areas and cities that might push back that were in the expansion, what was Dave Greeley called it, beauty pageant, but you look at you look at Nashville right now where there's still. I mean, there's still some question marks going on. I know there's some local politicians that are again, raising some objections to the stadium deal they've got. And I think a lot of these cities, from what they've seen and how they're, how this has been dealt with, this specifically this attempted relocation of Columbus, and seeing the way that this is playing with it, it takes a little bit of the shine off the product that MLS is trying to sell them as this huge thing that's going to be an economic impact for all of you. Patrick.
I guess you said it. Said it. Well, no, I was. I thought. I'm sorry. I thought Alex was going to chime in, so I was holding off. I think that no matter what happens, it will take time to unspool the eventual ending. And yeah, you know, for a league that makes up as it goes along, sometimes it takes a while to get to that decision. So, you know, maybe it's just dark now because trying to figure out the way to go forward so that they can get everybody to yes in parlance of trying to negotiate a settlement. You know, hopefully it won't take another 9 months because I don't want to even think what a 2019 crew season looks like with this hanging over it.
Yeah, I just miss it, and I agree with you. I think they want to, you know, find a way to get everybody a win, and you know, make everybody happy, and that's hard to do. And I think, and I'm still very, very adamant that we are going to, at least we're going to be happy because we're going to save the crew, in my personal and professional opinion. Moving forward, you know, let's head back because, you know, we talk about taking up time, and we've taken up plenty of time so far tonight. So we'll get into the preview for this upcoming Saturday. Crew back in Mapfre Stadium. First of is you were able to get me on 3 home games that we'll have here in September, and it seems like you know, the first in a while after that summer where we only got like 3 games after the turn of July, or when it got to July. Anyway, you're facing a New York FC team, one of that top tier in MLS East right now, third in the standings, but a team that they had some success against earlier this year, and of course in the postseason last year. A good test for this team. We say that every week, but what do you expect to see from Columbus this Saturday?
So Columbus, like I said earlier, pardon me, New York City FC is one of those top threes. You know, Atlanta, I think maybe the class, though they have their limitations. New York Red Bull handled a coaching change very well. New York City FC hasn't handled it as well. Dominic Torrent doesn't really quite know how to manage this team, doesn't quite have all the pieces that he wants to have fit. He doesn't do things exactly the same as Patrick Vieira. So it's a bit of a challenge for him to really be able to execute on a consistent basis. This is a team that's struggling to reach the tops of peak performance that they had. So I think that this is an eminently winnable game against a team that you might see come the postseason. You know, right now they're in the third spot. You know, Columbus is in the fourth spot, and if things shift and all of a sudden you're playing a play-in game, much like last year, you want to be able to take it to a team like New York City, especially with their odd home field advantage. You got to take advantage of these points when you get them at Mapfre.
Yeah, I think they need to do well in this game. It's a good test for them. I think they match up pretty well with New York, but you need to do better than you did against Chicago. I at least want to see them playing better than they played against Chicago. Even if they get a draw, or, you know, even if they lose, I'm not sure I really care. But I want to see that kind of fluid passing. I want to see a polished team. I want to see a confident team, and I want to see some goals. I think we really need to demonstrate that we're getting back on the right path and start to see some improvement heading towards the latter part of the season.
I'll agree with you there, Alex. I think that they do match up pretty well with New York City FC and how they play versus how Chrissy plays. Chicago, you know, they're a bogey team. I think New York will give Columbus a chance to play their own game. And so I think you will see a return to more fluidity. I think you'll see a team that's able to create chances here and there. I also think you'll see a more informed Justin Miram as he starts to shake off the rust of a 6-month vacation to Florida.
He did that one ball that he played across to Giassi last night or last Thursday. That was absolutely gorgeous. That you know, Giassi, I don't even think expected it. He megged a defenseman. Defender going through it, but Justin Miram, yeah, definitely one of those guys that you're excited and hoping. You need to see him make a turn, because these wingers, you're still, this team's so top heavy when it just comes to, or I guess not, you know, just up there at top with Federico Higuain and Giassi Zardes, and you need to find some sort of secondary scoring element, I think. I mean, it's they've got to find some way to start getting, you need to pop in a couple goals at least, because they're trying to win games and have success on such a thin margin, and it seems like every error that they make, you know, unforced error, it's coming back to hurt them, and they've got to, you know, work twice as hard to get a goal.
Well, yeah, it's I think that this game presents the challenge to be able to work out the flaws that have cropped up over the summer, you know, after a strong start and so some things getting figured out, and then some additions, Mullins being kind of an instant offense. And I think Miram presents a more of a challenge to even though he's familiar, to reintegrate, because he and Santos and Higuain, to play in the system, you really have to be 100% on the same page. And it takes even a player like Justin Miram, who's very, very aware of it, to get fully fit and fully sharp. You know, it's going to take him a little bit. And I think that playing against a tough team like New York City FC gives this team a chance to, you know, hone in on the offense, create more goals. The defense, if they don't give up the rare, weird, you know, mistake chance, this is a very good defensive team. Even when they're leaking goals, they don't give up a lot of great opportunities. So if the offense can get somewhere close to where Berhalter usually has them, I think this is a team that can roll off quite a few results in a row.
And it'll be something, you know, we're hoping to see. We'll get some picks right after a quick plug again for our friends at the Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street, and online at oldnortharcade.com. So, gentlemen, you know, with that in mind, what do we think the result is going to be? Patrick Gul'dan, you want to lead us off?
Yeah, I feel confident that this is a matchup that works for the team. So I see this as something, there'll be a shutout and Columbus wins 2-0. I think it'll be that significant. I think New York City FC is wobbling a little bit. I think Columbus has the chance to really find their form on offense with Justin with another week in the rotation. Federico Higuain hopefully over whatever has been ailing him. And, you know, they roll off a good win here.
All right, that's what I like to hear. Patrick Gul'dan with the 2-0 shutout win for Columbus. Sam, what you got?
Man, I'm really hoping that they do win. But like Patrick said earlier, you know, NYCFC is in one of those top three teams, and they tend to play, I think they tend to play well against Columbus. I'm really having a hard time, but I really think it's going to be a 1-1 tie.
Ooh. Sam, thinking that the Crew's scoring or lack thereof will continue. Alex, I'm hoping you can bring us home.
Let's do 4-2. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. Crew will win.
Nice. I'm going to go with 3-1 wins, so we've got 3-1 here. Just Sam not believing, but we'll let it slide that time. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure as always. Any parting shots from anyone? All right, hearing none. Oh.
None tonight. None tonight.
Let me think about this. I
no,
think
I,
that...
I gave Alex a chance to think of a parting shot. No.
All right. I'll save it for next week.
Okay, yeah, there you go. That's a little thing called a teaser. Bye, buddies.